each of you from God our Father, through Jesus Christ, his only Son, and our only Lord and Savior. Amen. Wasn't quite sure where each one of those stanzas was the last one. But we got it. And I knew it had four stanzas in it, just the way they ended it was okay. Okay, never mind. Sorry. So let's have a few more jokes before we get involved in the main theme and topic for this morning. These are, again, kid jokes, and maybe some of them you've heard. There was a mother who was preparing pancakes for her sons, Kevin, who was five, and Ryan, who was three. The boys began to argue over who would get the first pancake. So their mother saw the opportunity for a spiritual lesson, and she said, if Jesus were sitting here, he would say, let my brother have the first pancake, I can wait. So then Kevin turned to his younger brother and said, Ryan, you be Jesus. Do the math. All right. A father was at the beach with his children when the four-year-old son ran up to him, grabbed his hand, and led him to the water, to the shore, where the seagull lay dead in the sand. Daddy, what happened to him? The son asked. Well, he died and went to heaven, Dad replied. And then the boy thought for a moment and said, did God throw him back down? Okay, one more. This is for all the parents. A wife invited some people to dinner, and at the table, she turned to their six-year-old daughter and said, would you like to say the blessing tonight? And the girl replied, well, I don't know what to say. So mommy answered, well, just say what you hear mommy say. So the daughter bowed her head and said, dear Lord, why on earth did I invite all these people to dinner? Okay. Out of the mouth of babes. Today is one of those, like in the Nicene Creed, there is a pivot point that we observe with a moment of quiet and pondering. The pivot point between the first part of the creed where it's about God and his divinity, and then the pivot point, those three words and four words, and was made man. Now the creed shifts its focus to God and his humanity. Well, that's what today is. The transfiguration of Jesus is a pivot point from Jesus revealing himself, who is Jesus, in Epiphany that we are just concluding. And now we're going to pivot into Lent, which is the focus of that is, what has he done? Who is he in Epiphany? What has he done in Lent? So that's what, and we observe Transfiguration basically every single year. And it's a worthwhile observance, obviously, because this pivot point is very significant for Jesus and for our salvation. But what I want to do a little bit differently with you all today is to actually focus on the opportunity that we have once every 7 years or so, and that is to talk about St. Valentine's Day, like I have threatened you that I would do. It seems we've been very fortunate in these last couple of months that on our worship days, on Sundays, we've had a lot of saints' days fall on Sunday this year that we normally don't. So, for example, back in December, on December 6th, which was a Sunday, was the day of St. Nicholas, and we talked about St. Nicholas. On December 27th, it was the day of St. John, the apostle, the gospel writer, the evangelist. So we talked about him a little bit. Today, we have the privilege and the opportunity of talking about St. Valentine on his day, February the 14th. And then the next month, it's not going to be a Sunday, it's going to be a Wednesday, but nevertheless, it's going to be a day when we gather as a congregation, whoever's able to be here and whoever's able to watch online. We're going to talk about St. Patrick. Because all of these were like real people and real Christians, and they were clergy, if you will. They were priests. They were bishops, a lot of them, and they were servants of Christ. So let's begin this morning then and ask a very simple question. You know, who was he? Who was Valentine? And why do we remember him? And what does that have to do with cards and candy and hearts and flowers? The connection's very loose, by the way, which you'll see in a little while. Valentine's actual Roman Latin name was Valentinus. He lived in the Roman Empire in the early to mid-200s AD, so like in that third century, not very many years after Jesus lived in this world. History tells us that there were probably three Valentines who lived and died in that third century time frame. Two of them were in Italy. One of them was in Africa. And most likely the two Valentines in Italy were probably one and the same person, because one of them was a priest in Rome and another one was a bishop in what is today called Terni, Italy. So what most likely happened was that Valentinus, the Roman priest, eventually became the bishop, the Roman bishop of Interamna. That's what it was called back then. Today, Terni, Italy, like I said. He was eventually arrested and imprisoned, very much just like St. Nicholas was. He was put on trial, he was convicted, and he was sentenced to death. And then he was brought back to Rome for his execution. And the question is, why? What evil has he done? What has he done to deserve this sentence of death? Well, back in those days, in the mid-200s, the Roman emperor was a gentleman named Claudius II. He was also known as Claudius the Cruel. And he was having a bit of a problem in the empire, keeping it together and fortified and defended. He was having a problem recruiting and retaining soldiers for his army. Because see, back in those days, guess how long a tour of duty was? 25 years. When you signed up for the army, boy, did you sign up for the rest of your life, more or less, okay? So naturally, there were not a whole lot of young men who wanted to leave their wives and their children and their families and go fight for 25 years and not come back, or come back broken. So Claudius's solution to this difficulty of his, where he couldn't recruit and retain young men, his solution was no more marriage. Claudius banned marriage. There was going to be no more weddings for young people, no more wives, no more children, no more attachments back home, no more worries. It's just going to be a bunch of single guys, unmarried guys, who are going to be free of their domestic ties and worries, and who could therefore serve in the army very well for 25 years. Isn't that a great solution? No. So here's the dilemma now for Valentinus. Because as a Christian, and as a priest, and as a bishop, Valentinus believed in marriage, that it was a good thing, it was a gift of God. So he saw this Roman emperor decree as being wrong, as being inappropriate, as violating the will and the purposes of God. So what he did was, secretly and illegally, Valentinus performed marriages of young couples. He went ahead and did it anyway at night in the woods. We don't know how many years, but you can imagine one of those days he got caught. Somebody ratted him out to the authorities. And so that's why he got arrested. That's why he got put in prison. That's why he was put on trial. That's why he was convicted and sentenced to death for violating the emperor's decree. Now the story goes that in prison, while he was awaiting execution, Valentinus often would pray out loud. We see that example, of course, in the New Testament, in the book of Acts. And even we today try to encourage this practice of praying, not only to yourself, but praying out loud. So his jailer couldn't help but hear. His jailer couldn't help but notice. And one day, his jailer, the story goes, asked Valentinus to pray for his blind daughter, that she could receive her sight, that she could see. And the story goes, he prayed, and she did. She did receive her sight. God healed her blindness. She was able to see. And the result of that was that the jailer and his family, very much like the jailer and the family in the book of Acts, became Christians, became believers, became followers of Jesus. And they would write notes back and forth to Valentinus in prison. Not just simply oral, verbal communication, but written communication. And whenever Valentinus would write back to them, especially to the little girl, he would sign his note from your Valentine. That's where we get that from. Well, Valentinus then was eventually executed. We believe it was on this day, February the 14th in the year 269. And it turns out that not even a year later, Claudius the Cruel was killed in battle in January of 270 AD. And that would pretty much be the end of the story until the year 496 AD. And in the year 496 AD, the church, one of the leaders, one of the bishops, I'm sure, decided to honor Valentinus with kind of a new holiday and a new observance to replace the pagan holiday that hadn't gone away yet. The Roman Empire hadn't totally folded. A lot of the Roman customs and traditions and feasts and festivals were still being observed. So on this day, February the 14th, in the year 496, it was still going to be the Roman holiday of Juno. And Juno was the queen of Roman gods and goddesses. She was also the goddess of women and marriage. And the 14th was also then the eve of the feast, the Roman feast of Lupercalia, which was on the 15th. February the 15th was the Roman feast of Lupercalia, and it honored Faunus, which is the god of fertility, women, marriage, fertility, gods, goddesses, and forests. And what they did back in those days was they would write the names of young ladies on a piece of paper, put them in a jar of some kind, and then the boys would come along and draw out a name of one of the young ladies, and they would be paired up for this festival of Lupercalia. They might have been paired up then for the rest of the year, you know, dating or whatever, and some of them might have even gotten married. You know, this might have been sort of kind of like the matchmaking service back in those days, one of the early ones. So that's what the church then said. Let's have a Christian better observance instead of all this Roman pagan stuff. And let's call it St. Valentine's Day on the 14th of February. And I didn't track, you know, the course of the holiday over the next couple of 100,000 years. But let me just say this, that whatever success the church may have had to replace the pagan holidays on the 14th and the 15th of February with St. Valentine's Day, whatever success there may have been, by the time we get to the 1900s, St. Valentine's has become pagan again, except with a modern twist. Because now, we have the pairing, and we have the romance, and now we've added candy, and we've added flowers, and we've added cards, and we've added hearts. Which is basically, you know, Lupercalia in the 20th century form. Oh, and then we added Cupid. And Cupid, guess who Cupid was? Cupid was the Roman god of love. So we add him on top of that. And so we're back to St. Valentine's Day being not even St. Valentine's Day. It's just simply an opportunity for romance and pairing and love and hearts and flowers. And now in the 21st century, we don't even call it St. Valentine's Day anymore. We just call it Valentine's Day. We forget about the saint part. So that's a little bit of a background. I don't know, maybe you guys knew some of this stuff, maybe you didn't. Hopefully you learned something. But now we got to ask the question, what's our takeaway? Because it's not my job here just to simply give you interesting information, which you can find out on your own. We got to talk about what does this mean, okay? So one of the ways you can look at what this means is in this little meme that's hopefully going to be on the screen now, which is a commemoration of St. Valentine. And for those of you who can't see, let me read the whole thing to you. Roses are red, violets are blue. I was beaten with clubs, beheaded, buried under the cover of darkness, disinterred by my followers, and you commemorate my martyrdom by sending each other chocolate. Yeah, that could be a nice summary, a nice takeaway, but I have three that maybe are more specific and more helpful. But that kind of does put it into perspective in terms of what we're doing on St. Valentine's Day. The first takeaway that I would suggest that we can have from this little story of Valentinus is that marriage is a gift of God. It is a blessed, complementary partnership that God intends for the good and the welfare of each person in that partnership, in that relationship, for as long as they shall live. At least for as long as one of them shall live. Okay? And because marriage is a gift of God, no one has the right to forbid it. No one has the right to modify it. No one has the right to degrade it. Which, unfortunately, we are seeing in our society. But the reason why we're seeing it in our society is because what I already just mentioned and hinted at, our society is becoming more and more pagan. Our society is becoming more and more secular. So it's natural in a secular, pagan society and culture that marriage is forbidden, marriage is modified, marriage is degraded. That is happening more and more in court. That is happening more and more in our culture. That's where it's being modified as we keep drifting further and further away from God, as we keep drifting further and further away from the Bible as a culture and society. And it is, of course, degraded in humor and degraded in speech and as people talk. And as Christians, we can't fight this with a holiday. We can't resist this with a feast or a festival. What we as Christians need to do to stand up against this trend in our society and culture is we need to stand up for the blessedness of marriage. Not just its sanctity, but its blessedness. The fact that it's a gift. The fact that it's from God. And I know there are days when the person you're married to does not feel or seem like a gift. But the fact that you are married is the gift of God. Marriage, the institution, if you will, of marriage, is a gift of God. And when a person marries well, there's nothing like it, is there? And that's part of what we need to be somehow conveying to our society and conveying to our culture, not just the sanctity of marriage, but the blessedness of marriage, which is what Valentinus was doing by secretly illegally marrying young couples, because marriage was a gift from God that could not and should not be denied to people, whatever age. All right, that's sort of kind of obvious takeaway number one. Takeaway number two is not so obvious, but it's something that I've been thinking about, and I've been talking to some of my fellow pastors. We've been talking to each other about this, that there is coming maybe the possibility of church weddings being separated from legal marriage. Because right now they're one and the same thing, okay? That when somebody gets married in church, it is both a religious service and it is a legal transaction. And whoever's conducting, performing the wedding, the officiant, the pastor, the priest, the rabbi, whatever religious setting you're in, is basically acting as an agent of the state. Whatever legal marriage was in the Roman Empire back in those days, this is not what St. Valentine was doing. He was not doing something legal, but what he was doing was something valid in the eyes of God. So these couples who were getting married by him were not married in the eyes of the law, they were just simply being married in the eyes of God. So If you're watching what's going on in our culture and society, if you're watching what's going on in our government, as we see the government disrespecting God's gift of marriage and imposing its errors on society and maybe even one day on the church, we may find ourselves having to get out of the legal marriage business and into the church wedding ministry. And the two things might become separated. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know how that would work. We're not there yet. But it's the kind of thing where we have to sort of kind of keep in mind that this day may not be that far off. People may have to get married twice. You know, once in church and once in the courthouse or by the mayor. They may only get being married once, either in the church or in the courthouse or in the mayor. I don't know what it's going to look like. But the church may one of these days find itself getting out of the legal marriage business just because of what the government has done to marriage. Does that make sense? You follow what I'm saying? All right, that's takeaway number three, possibly down the road. But here's the most important thing, takeaway number three, that the life and the death of St. Valentine show us what real love looks like. On this day when we think of hearts and flowers and romance and pairing and so on and so forth, St. Valentine's life and death and ministry show us what real love looks like. Real love for God and real love for others, including our enemies, which is what Jesus talks about, having love for the enemy. And real love towards God, real love towards others, real love even towards our enemies is a whole lot more than romance. It's a whole lot more than hearts and flowers and candies and cards. St. Valentine loved God so much, he could not accept or follow that ungodly Roman decree that was promulgated by the emperor. He had to violate it. He had to disobey it. What did it cost him? His freedom, his health, ultimately his life. Folks, real love always involves paying a price. It doesn't matter who the object of your love is. It always involves paying a price. And everyone who loves God is going to pay a price. Everyone who follows Jesus is going to pay a price. And that's always been true. And that's true everywhere. It's true even here and even now, more and more as time goes on. And we even talked a little bit about this just a couple of weeks ago. We talked about the cost of joining Jesus on his mission. Remember, following him into our neighborhoods. What's the cost? What's the price we're going to have to pay to do that? If we're going to be part of his mission and we're going to follow him into our neighborhood, what's the price? We're going to have to slow down our lives and empty out our schedules a bit so that we can have the time to listen to our neighbor and to be friends with our neighbors, whoever it is our neighbors are. I'm sorry, that's a price. That's a cost, because that's not how we are programmed to live today. It's busy, 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 do, go, 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 next. This is not a lifestyle that's going to enable us to join Jesus on his mission, follow him into our neighborhood, and then be useful to him in terms of serving our neighbor. That's the price. And then St. Valentine loved God so much, he had compassion on his jailer. His jailer. That would have been his enemy. He had compassion on his jailer. He prayed for his daughter. And then he went and had a relationship by correspondence with his family. With the jailer, the family, the daughter. That's what it looks like to love people. Even your enemies. You know, people are going to reject us at some point, in some way, for being Christians. The more we make it known that we're Christians, the more that we make our Christianity public knowledge, the more we are going to face that rejection, that price, paying that price. And then we have a choice to make in terms of how we react. We can either react naturally, which would be either to withdraw or to strike back, or we can react supernaturally, which would be to love them and to help them, to listen to them, to be their friend, to bless them. Where do we get that kind of love? Where would such a love come from that would enable us to do that? That would enable us to love God so much and to love people that way? It's not a trick question. Love like that only comes from God. Only he can give us that kind of love for himself. Only he can give us that kind of love for others. Only he can give us that kind of love for our enemies, the people who reject us. And you know what? He's already done it. He's already given us that kind of love. What does it say in the Gospel of St. John, the Apostle? 3:16, right? God so loved the world that he gave his only son. Past tense. It's already done. It's already been done. And then St. Paul writes in Romans that God has poured his love into our hearts. God has already done that as Christians. God has already supplied us with that kind of love for him, for others, for our enemies. Where does that kind of love come from? It comes from Jesus, who suffered for us and died on the cross. And that when that love gets poured into us, what does that love look like? It looks like St. Valentine's life and ministry and death and coming resurrection. That's what we remember today, okay? So I hope this has been kind of a little reframer and refresher on what St. Valentine's Day is really all about. It's perfectly fine to do hearts and flowers and candies and dinner and romance and all that stuff. Nothing wrong with that. But please, let's not forget who St. Valentine really was and what he really stood for and what we are really remembering today. Amen? Amen.